Can we begin this meeting with a moment of silence to reflect on our primary purpose, and those that wish can join in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I've asked a few of you to do reading, so maybe you can come up here to the front and we'll keep it flowing. First is James G. from Baltimore. We'll read Who is an Addict?
Hello, family. I'm James G. from Baltimore. Thank you. Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking were centered in drugs in one form or the other, the getting and using it, finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whom life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grips of a continuing and progressive illness who ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you, James. I've asked Gloria D. to read Why Are We Here? Yeah, Gloria. I think I told Deidre the wrong thing, but...
Oh, God. I'm addict named Gloria from Hemet. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed our use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to add drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced and continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
And Deidre, are you out there? He's going to read the Just for Today from February 12th.
Wow.
Yeah, I know you wanted the short one.
My name's Deidre and I'm an addict. Until we experience the healing that happens when we work the 12 steps, it is doubtful that we can find a statement more true than the quote above. Most of us come to NA hanging our heads in shame. Thinking about the past and wishing we could go back and change it. Our fantasies and expectations about the future may be so extreme that on the first date with someone, we find ourselves wondering which lawyer we'll use for the divorce. Almost every experience causes us to remember something from the past or begin projecting into the future. Excuse me. At first, it's difficult to stay in the moment and seem as though our minds won't stop. We have a hard time just enjoying ourselves, each time we realize that our thoughts are not focused on what's happening right now, we can pray and ask a loving God to help us get out of ourselves. If we regret the past, we make amends by living differently today. If we dread the future, we work on living responsibly today. When we work the steps and pray each time, we discover we're not living in the present. We'll notice that those sometimes aren't occurring as often as they used to. Our faith will help us live just for today. We'll have hours, even days, when our full attention is focused on the current moment in time, not the regrettable past or fearful future. Just for today, when I live fully in each moment, I open myself to joys that might otherwise escape me. If I'm having trouble, I will ask a loving God for help.
Thank you, Deidre. Okay, one announcement that I forgot. If you have any cell phone or electronic device that might disturb your neighbors, please turn it off. And I thought, since the title of this is Just for Today, Living in the Moment, the moment is we're here to listen to two fine speakers, so keep the texting to a minimum, too, if you could. Thank you. Our first speaker is Patty G. from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I told her I was going to say that I met her 10 minutes ago and she changed my life, but no. But no, I'm looking forward to hearing both our speakers, and we'll begin with Patty.
Okay, I'm an addict, I'm Patty, and I'm really grateful and honored to be asked to share here at a World Convention. It's not what I thought I would be doing when I walked through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. I'll just tell you a little bit, like, I could barely hold a conversation when I got here. If I was asked to do a reading, I was completely filled with anxiety and overwhelmed, and so I've come a long way, and still got a long way to go. Anyway, I was thinking about this topic, and I was trying not to think about it, but also to think about it, you know what I mean? And just let it wander through my brain the last couple days, and since I've been asked to speak, I really didn't spend that much time thinking about it, because I thought I should be spending more time trying to live in the moment. And such a balance, you know, to plan for the future and live in the moment. And I was thinking last night about how when I got here, you know, that reading that was just read, that Just for Today, it was so appropriate. I had so much regret for my future or for my past, and I had so much shame and embarrassment and fear, you know, so much fear of the future that it was really, it was so difficult to live in the present moment. And so when I got to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous and I came as a visitor, my youngest sister was in a psychiatric facility in Fort Lauderdale that had they had an adolescent unit for kids with substance abuse problems. And I went to that meeting and I thought that my life would go back to normal, like once she got out of there, like everything would just go back to normal. And here's the thing, you know, what I think when we get here is, like, I had no frame of reference for anything to be any different. You know, my the disease of addiction, active addiction, had normalized a lot of abnormal lifestyles. You know, I had lost a lot of skills. I didn't develop a lot of skills. I just didn't know how to live life. And that was true before I picked up my first drug, and it just got steadily worse. You know, I had no hope for anything being any different when I got here. The best that I could hope for was that it wouldn't get any worse. And so I went to that first meeting, and I think it was the grace of my higher power that I was able to hear a message of hope at that meeting. The woman who spoke, and, you know, at the time, I didn't really think too much about it. You know, it took quite a while of actually being clean before I realized, like, how basically the stars were kind of lined up right that I ended up in that meeting at that night in that facility in October of 1980, when there weren't that many Narcotics Anonymous meetings in Fort Lauderdale or too many other places for that matter. And there I was at that meeting, and I was able to hear the message that the woman who spoke that night, she talked about the way that I felt. And I couldn't verbalize how I felt. I knew I had been walking around since a little kid with this uncomfortability that drugs and alcohol had taken the edge off until they didn't work anymore, but I didn't know what else to do except use. So by the time I got here, all I thought about was getting loaded all the time. You know, that seemed like the only thing that might make me feel better. So, you know, hearing that message, I was given some hope that things could be different and that my life could get better. You know, I looked around the room, and I don't know about you guys, but when I got to my first meeting, I had the same sensation that I had when I picked up my first drug. Like, I remember the first time when I first started using, I took a drug, and I felt like I could breathe again. I felt like the weight of the world was off my shoulders for a minute, and everything was going to be okay. And the drugs didn't do that for me anymore, but I got to my first meeting, and I felt the same way. I felt like everything was going to be okay. And I remember the members that were there that night, they said, if you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, you probably do. People like us don't end up in rooms like this by accident, and that I should try not to use for 90 days, and that if my life didn't get better, you would cheerfully refund my misery. And I knew I was miserable. I wasn't sure I was an addict because I had, the disease had normalized the way I lived. Most of the people that I hung out with used the way I used. I didn't think my using was abnormal by the time I got here. And I had to actually be clean for a while to even know that I was an addict. I was waiting for somebody to tell me, like, I didn't shoot dope in New York and I wasn't old enough and, you know, and nobody ever said that to me. You know, they said, keep coming back, we need you. And I was pretty surprised, you know, because most people didn't really want me around that much, and I didn't want me around. You know, if I could have, I would have shed my skin and disappeared, you know, at that point. So, you know, this process of recovery, you know, it's not instant. Like, we don't just add water or get a sponsor with a lot of clean time and automatically feel better. What I found to be true for myself is that once I stopped using, like, all the stuff that happened that made my life unmanageable because I was an active addict, like, that stuff cleaned up, but what I got in return was all the feelings I had that made me want to get high in the first place. You know, I started to feel things again. And what I realized is, you know, there was a woman who used to come around in my early recovery, and she called it the pending dooms, you know, that feeling of anxiety, like something bad's going to happen. And she talked about a sense of urgency, that the disease has a sense of urgency, and that if we can just sit it out for a few minutes, like, it'll go away. You know, and I never knew about sitting anything out. You know what I mean? I was always looking for a quick way to feel different. And so what I learned is that I could start to get through not feeling comfortable. And little by little, you know, my life started to get better. You know, I got a sponsor, I worked steps, and I've stayed clean since I've been here on my first white chip. And, you know, I believed you when you told me I never had to use again. They said, surrender, the war's over, you lost. And I knew I had lost. You know, I was treading water. And so that's the one thing that's been true for me since I got here, no matter what I've been through. And I've been through a lot of stuff, you know. People have died, gotten married, gotten divorced, had stuff, lost stuff, got more stuff, lost that stuff, got other stuff, went here, went there, you know. And and I've stayed in the middle of this thing. And little by little, what I've seen happen is, you know, we gain experience from being here that lets me know that it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Like, I can carry that around with me. And I think about, you know, the growth of this program and, you know, where we've come from and where we're going. And we don't really know how good it can get for us when we get here. You know, I didn't have a frame of reference for that. And this is the main thing that's changed, you know, is most of the time I feel pretty good in my own skin. I don't avoid the mirror. I don't avoid other people. I don't avoid responsibilities. I can live in the moment with dignity and grace. And whatever comes around, I know I'm going to be okay. And, you know, working these steps, you know, I love that the reading talked about the process of working the steps and continuing to do that. And I'm on a 10-step right now. And, you know, working these steps again and again and again. Because there's always more, you know. And I thought if I just did them right that I would live in this perpetual bliss state. And that has not happened for me. It might for you, but it hasn't happened for me. And, you know, working these steps always works. It always works, you know, and it's about the process, you know, and we share that with each other, you know. The person who comes in tomorrow doesn't know that you just got here today, you know what I mean? So sometimes I can still kind of tend to be shy and standoffish, and I try to remember that that you know you guys are just like me. You know what I mean? Like you're not scary, you're not different. You know, like you know we need to love and support each other. That's what this thing is about, no matter where we are. And I've been through some really dark places, clean, and not had to pick up. And I've watched people go through all kinds of stuff. So we live this thing, we live in the moment, and I don't know how long I've spoken. Not very long. Yeah, I'm good for like 10 minutes. Well, and then it's either 10 minutes or like an hour and a half with me. So anyway, I guess I could talk about more stuff. I was thinking some stuff this morning and last night, but you know that stuff's gone. Of course, that's the uselessness of living in that. And I have, you know, a lot of this stuff that I do now, I do in faith. Like the thing that I got when I got here is, I got a loving God that expresses himself in our group conscience. You know, and not just at our meetings, but for me, like. My God expresses himself through everybody that I meet, sometimes through the TV, sometimes through a billboard, you know, could be anywhere, like my God can send me a message. And the whole thing about working these steps, you know, it says, the 12th one says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So that tells me that I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. You know, and what that means for me is not to live my life asleep. So if I'm thinking about yesterday and what I shoulda and coulda woulda done, and I'm worried about tomorrow and what I coulda woulda shoulda do then, you know, it's I am missing the present moment. And there's been a lot of times in my recovery, you know, like I'll be like waiting for something, you know, like even leading up to this convention, there's part of it that you know, the excitement of planning and, you know, trying to figure out what I'm going to do and, you know, who I want to see and all this crap. And in the moments when I'm doing that, I'm missing whatever's going on in front of me. So there's where that balance thing comes in, and to try and have a plan and be flexible enough to know, like, that my God's got my back. The God I had when I got here, I was raised as a Catholic, not bad, not a bad Catholic kind of thing. Like, my mother believed in a lot of kind of cool stuff. It was more like a Jesus loves the little children kind of Catholic. And it wasn't that bad. But she quit making us go to church when all we would do was laugh at the people singing. And but by the time I got here, because of the stuff that had happened to me before I got here, what happened to me as a child, what happened to me as a teenager, the things that happened to me as a result of my using. I thought, okay, if there is a God, he just doesn't give a shit about me. You know, maybe there's a God, but he's too busy, he's indifferent, and I didn't think that my God cared. And what happened is, in my early part of my recovery, I got clean in the month of October. And I was working two jobs, and my second job, I worked at a record store. So I hadn't given up my jobs yet, because that was all I knew for my identity, basically, was how to, like, go to work and put on that idea of myself. And so my second job, I went to work on Halloween, and the manager handed out joints. And I had been given, I had been clean 2 weeks. So when he went to hand me a joint for, you know, happy Halloween for our breaks, I said no. And what I had been doing in those 2 weeks is, you guys told me that I shouldn't pick up the first one. And I thought it was one of the other ones. I knew there was a problem, but I didn't know it was the first one. So, and I had been praying, as you said, you know, ask God to help you not pick up the first one. Just every day ask God. And I was like, okay, like, God, if you're there, please help me stay clean today. So on that day, 2 weeks into my clean time, I said, oh, no, no, thank you. And I was so surprised that I said no. No is not my normal reaction. So when I said no, at that moment, like, I realized that there probably was a God that was actually listening to me. And my idea of my higher power started to grow and change. And when I got to my second step, they said I could make whatever power I wanted. And I decided that my higher power had time for me all the time, no matter what, no matter how stupid or silly it seemed, but that my God had my back all the time. And he thought I was really cool and funny and cute and everything else. So, you know, and that's the God that I decided to keep, a God that's always there. And that's worked out for me pretty well. Is I believe that my God speaks to me through other people, that my God, you know, I don't believe in a God that gives me, you know, lessons, that tries to teach me a lesson. I just don't believe in that. I believe that the lessons that I need to learn are given to me in the most gentle, easiest way to catch my attention. You know, I believe that if I didn't have a God, the lessons would be a lot more painful. So, you know, and that's my choice to just look at it that way, and you guys gave me that. You know, so that being said, you know, it frees me up. Like, once I take a third step, which I have to take over and over, sometimes all day long, and make that decision and make that acknowledgement that I have a loving God who's got my back, it gives me that sense again where I can breathe. And I don't have to micromanage my life. You know, I can make a plan, and if it doesn't turn out the way I want, I can be sure that it's turned out better than I thought. You know what I mean? And I can't tell you the freedom and joy that that's given me, and the ability to mostly live in the moment. And it's a long, slow process. You know, one of my favorite quotes in the text is that long-term recovery is a slow process. And I need to remember that. You know, I need to be gentle with myself. I need to let myself learn whatever I need to learn in the time my God presents it. And anyway, I probably haven't spoken quite long enough, but I feel like I'm done. So thank you so much. I love you guys.
Thank you, Patty. Our next speaker, some people have traveled from across the world to get here and across the country, and Bob traveled across town. But whatever gets us here, right? And please welcome Bob G. from San Diego.
My name's Bob. I'm an addict. First off, my home group is Saturday Morning Live, 29th and Landis, right up the road here on Saturday morning. So any of you that are looking for a good Saturday morning meeting, come on down. We'll be there tomorrow. I'll be there tomorrow because my sponsee that normally secretaries it is sick, so I'm covering for him. And it's a great meeting. Thank you for sharing. Enjoyed it. Related to most every bit of it. You know, you'd think after 30 years you'd get a little more comfortable at doing this, and I got to tell you that every time I get asked to speak, I go through this anxiety thing. And right in this moment, I'm not feeling it as much, and part of that is due to, you know, usually the way that it works for me is I get asked to speak, and then I start thinking about the topic, which in this particular case, I really love this topic, and it's integral to my daily practice. But and then I have this fabulous pitch going on in my head. And then when it gets about two or three days before I'm supposed to speak, I can't remember any of it. And I'm thinking, oh, man, what is wrong with you, you know? And so I got here and I was a little running around because I couldn't find the room, even though in the back, I mean, I kind of knew where it was, but I got hung up on the 20A. So I'm thinking, oh, ballroom A. So I go all the way down to ballroom A and figure out, oh, no, it's in the other building over there. So anyway, and then I got here and I had one of those little incidences that I have on a regular basis that I appreciate, which is I ran into one of you and I ran into my friend Leo up front here, my friend that we just met. And I walked out front to read the marquee to make sure I was in the right place. And Leo was standing there, and we struck up a conversation. And once again, one addict helping another addict, you know. And just having a little short conversation with him, I felt that anxiety and everything start to lift and started to realize that I'm at home and around friends and that there's nothing really to worry about, you know. I, too, like Patty, you know, got clean at my first meeting, and I've been clean ever since. You know, and that's, you know, that's just the way it was for me because I really, really needed it by the time I found it. I mean, I wasn't out there all that long, about 13 years. But during that 13 years, you know, I got busted. I went to federal prison twice. I, you know, had near-death experiences and all of that stuff that we do before we get here. So by the time that I got here, I was really ready. And actually, I tell people, like, the last 5 years of my using, I really didn't want to use. I just didn't know how to do anything else, you know. And the first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous that I stumbled into, and I was still in treatment at the time, man, there was just something that I felt in that room. I looked around the room. I didn't relate to anybody much, you know. Narcotics Anonymous in 1981 was a little bit more rough around the edges, I'll say, you know, and it took me a while to get past the appearances and listening to what people had to say and to find out that, you know, that we all had this one thing in common, and that commonality is that we share this disease of addiction, and that when you start talking about the disease and how it made you feel and the things that you had to do to keep doing your addiction, then, you know, I relate to, you know, and I tell my sponsees about, you know, one of the things that happens to people when they first get clean, and I mean, at least this was for me, I don't know, maybe for you, but I got clean and I started to get a little bit of self-esteem back, and then the first thing I wanted to do was run out and tell everybody, you know, oh yeah, I'm clean, man, I'm not doing that anymore, you know, and let me show you how to do this, you know. I wanted to bring in all my friends and they didn't want to hear anything I had to say. I tried that with, when I got here, I had some warrants out for my arrest, and so I had the idea that I'd go to the DA and tell him, hey, you know, I'm here to make good on all this, you know, I'm an addict and I'm clean today and it's all going to be okay. And they said, oh, yeah, congratulations, and yeah, we're still going to file charges on you. Thanks for telling us where you're at. So, just for today, living the program, living in the moment, is there's two things that I have like reoccurring themes when I work with sponsees and when I share at meetings, and one of them is living in the moment, And the other one is that recovery is a precious gift, you know. And the more I'm around here, the more it just comes down to those two simple basic processes, you know. And it wasn't, you know, when I first got clean like everybody else, you know, you hear this just for today, just keep coming back, you know, and all that. And I heard it, but I didn't understand what it meant. And the whole idea about living for today, it was completely foreign to me. When I got here, you know, I like many of us, was so self-obsessed and self-centered and driven by my disease and pretty much eaten up with the preoccupation of using and getting more and the obsession to use that there wasn't room for much else. And, you know, I started using at a fairly early age. And, you know, you hear the people say that when you start using, you stop growing emotionally. And I believe that, you know, and I tell people today, I'm 63 now, but I tell people that when I hit 50, I finally started feeling like an adult, you know. And so, you know, this whole concept of just for today was something that took a long time for me to kind of get my head around and understand what that truly meant. And, you know, living in the moment, you know, living right here, right now, you know. And the truth is that in this very second right here is all we really have, and right here, right now, everything is perfect. And especially for everybody here, because here we are at a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous surrounded by 15,000 other recovering addicts. How great is that, you know? And so all that other stuff out there, you know, that fear of losing my job, that fear of not having enough money, that fear of, you know, losing a friendship, losing whatever, you know. When I can get back into staying in the moment, all that stuff just kind of falls away, you know. And what a relief that is, because for so many years, I was driven by those fears and insecurities, you know. I never was able to just be me, you know, because I was so busy trying to figure out what it was that I was going to say next to make you like me or appreciate me or accept me, you know. I mean, that was my whole life. That was the way it was. And as such, I always had this separation from everybody around me, and I never really felt like I fit in like most of us feel. And then when I got clean and started working steps and getting in touch with a power greater than myself, you know, I had to really kind of rediscover who I was. I had to find out that I wasn't nearly as great as I thought I was, and I really wasn't as sick as I thought I was, you know. And what a revelation that was for me. And then out of this process of working steps and staying clean and going to meetings and bumping my head along the way so many times over and over again, you know, I got to slowly but surely figure out who and what I am and what I'm about, what I stand for, you know, what I value, what I don't value. And I also got to find out that so many of the beliefs and understandings and things that I thought were absolute truths, you know, were not the case, you know. And I was rereading in the book today, you know, Just for Today, and then the IP, number 8, and which are two of my favorites. I always recommend them to new people or anybody around. But, you know, and it talks about that whole idea of truth, you know. It says, you know, you have to be willing to open up and be able to accept that not everything you believe is what you believe. I'm not going to quote it directly, but okay, I will. Everything we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth, you know. And that's the thing for me, you know. I don't pretend to have a lot of answers, you know. I have some experiences after being clean for a lot of years, and I know that there are certain things that when I seem to do them on a regular basis, my life gets better. One of them is going to meetings on a regular basis. One of them is working with others. One of them is doing prayer and maintenance, prayer and meditation on a regular basis, maintaining that daily maintenance in my life. That's how I stay connected, because it's very easy for this addict that when he stops doing those things, to let that self-centered part of me still get back up there and start thinking that I got ideas and answers and that I'm got something. And there's something about making that attempt on a regular basis to get humble enough to do a little prayer and meditation, to incorporate that gets me in touch with just for today and living in the moment and staying in touch with that loving power greater than myself, you know, which was the gift of this program to me. You know, when I got here, I didn't understand what that was. You know, going back to my first meeting, when I walked into my first meeting, I knew that there was something going on there. I could feel it and sense it. I describe it as something greater than the sum of its parts, you know, that there was something else going on there. And for the longest time, probably in the beginning, my understanding of a higher power was based on the group. You know, that's who it was. Because I came in here with a lot of misconceptions about God and religion. And, you know, I was raised as a Baptist in Texas. And, you know, it was all about original sin. You're going to burn in hell. And, you know, and I looked at all the stuff that had gone on in my life, and I figured I was toast, you know. And there wasn't any coming back from that. And then working with sponsors and reading the literature around here, I found out that, you know, that there was a higher power that I could have, that I could create myself, and the only requirement be that it be greater than myself and loving. And, you know, like Patty, that's what I did. I slowly but surely began to gather those things that I appreciated. And I, too, don't believe that my God tests me or punishes me. You know, I'm given opportunities. I mean, stuff happens. You know, life is what happens. And you can be doing everything perfectly and everything fine, and then for some unknown reason, something comes from left field that you weren't expecting and rocks your world. Well, for me, early on, every time something like that happened, I would immediately think it had something to do with me and something that I had done wrong, you know, or I was being punished, you know. And what I've learned over the years, and especially after walking through many of those things that I really thought I could never get through clean, like loss of careers, loss of spouses, you know, loss of everything at one point or another, you know, I've discovered that even in the midst of those terrible circumstances, that there's something there to find gratitude for, and something that I can learn out of that situation. And I've learned that. I had that pounded in my head from my very first sponsor, because I used to call him up and whine all the time about what was going on in my life. And he'd say stuff like, you know, why don't you see if you can find one item of gratitude today? You know, make a gratitude list, you know. And I'd like, but that's such a waste of time, you know. And it's still, you know, to me, it's a powerful tool. You know, it snaps me out of that condition and stuff that's going on around me and gets me back to the reality, which is that every day that I'm clean, I'm a miracle. You know, every day that I'm clean, I'm doing the right thing. Every day that I'm helping somebody else, I'm doing the right thing. Every time I help carry this message, I'm doing the right thing. And then as far as that whole thing about, you know, relearning things, I learned a lot, reviewing things that I thought were absolutes and finding out that maybe they weren't. I learned that whole concept through doing service to NA. You know, when I first got clean, you know, it was real small. There was a small area. There was four meetings a week in Orange County. And, you know, there was only two regions in California, northern and southern. And there was a lot of opportunities for service. And so my sponsor at the time was big on service, you know. And so if he was going to sponsor you, you had to do service. And I think at 90 days or something, I was sitting in a meeting, and he says, this meeting needs a GSR. How about you? You know? And I said, okay, what's a GSR? You know? And then probably for the next 5 years, man, if there was a service commitment going on within a day's drive of where I was there, you know? And what happens as a result of that is that pretty soon you're doing so much stuff that you're starting to feel real important, you know? Like, they can't do this without me. I have to be there, you know. And then sometimes I'd get there and I had my own preconceived ideas and notions about how it's supposed to be done, you know. And some young whippersnapper would get up in there and start telling me that they wanted to do something a different way. Well, we don't do it that way around here, you know. And oh, my God, I argue for an hour and a half over whether it's supposed to have cube sugar or packet sugar, you know. And all these gut-wrenching, important things that you had to decide. And I remember that one time I was faced with one of those situations where I had, you know, so I don't even remember what the situation was, but I was just absolutely certain that this decision was wrong. But I said, okay, I'll go along with it just so they can see that I was right, you know. And I let took the vote. I did, you know, I abstained or whatever we did back then, and they'd started doing this new procedure or new policy, and I honestly can't even remember because it's the same old thing over and over again. For those of you that do service, you know that. You know, and damned if it didn't work out exactly like it was supposed to, you know. And what an eye-opening experience that was for me. I had to realize that, hey, maybe I don't have all the answers, and maybe that there is something. And then what I learned to come to understand was that if I could take the concept of the third step and turning this thing over into the care of God in my life, that I could apply that same principle to the fellowship as a whole. So today, whenever I see some big controversy come through, which thank God we don't have them as much as we used to anymore, but even still, you know, whenever something like that, I can go back and say, you know what, I understand that this fellowship is in the hands of a power greater than myself, and that it, you know, our higher power is never going to let us wander too far. It's just the way it is, you know. We'll go to a certain point, and then the truth reveals itself, and then we all get back to doing what we need to be doing. And I've seen that process happen over and over again in meetings and in service. And to me, that's another example of a loving God working in my life, you know, and in the lives of all of us here. You know, for living in the moment, it's, you know, something that I strive to do on a regular basis. It's not easy always, because some days I'm better at it than others, just like everything else. Some days I work a program better than others. But if I can allow myself to be open to that possibility, you know, my life gets better and things, you know, happen as they're supposed to, and I don't have to be responsible for the outcome. And I'm, you know, I'm eternally grateful for that. You know, recovery is the single greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. Everything that I have that's going on in my life today, all the other things that have come my way, spiritually, physically, whatever, are all directly related to the basic principles that we have here in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm eternally grateful for that. We have about 15 minutes, too. Some years ago, I had a situation that happened in my life that opened the doors to some greater things. I went through a divorce after 25 years of marriage, and it was pretty painful. And then shortly that same year, my mom passed away, and then the following year, I lost my job. That I'd had for 15 years and thought that I would be able to, you know, to end out my career working in that field. And each one of those single events tested my faith and my understanding in this whole thing. And while my first thought was not to go get loaded, you know, there were a lot of other really dark thoughts, you know, like short drives off or long drives off short piers and, you know, things like that. And, you know, luckily for me, I have a group of men in my life that that are part of my support group that I see on a weekly basis. And these guys gathered around me, as did some of the people in the fellowship. And they reminded me that this too shall pass, that things will get better. And just for today, it's going to be okay, you know. And it took me a while to get through that because it was pretty heavy, you know. And then about a year or two after that, I decided to maybe try to get back out there and see if I could get another relationship going. And so I met this woman. I tell people I met her the old-fashioned way, www.match.com. That was on the 7-day free trial. And I don't even think they offer that anymore. And I met this woman who was not one of us, who, matter of fact, really didn't like addicts one bit because she had two sisters that were raging addicts and alcoholics. And And yet we had this connection, you know, in spite of the differences that we had. I mean, we were actually pretty different. We didn't like the same music or anything, but we had this connection at a deeper level. And I used to take her to NA meetings, and it used to drive her crazy, you know. And she'd sit there, and she'd look around. Can't they paint this place? Don't they ever mop the floor? You know, and I finally learned that it was, you know. And for a while there, I used to try to explain to her how great this was and how fabulous it was and, you know, what a great thing. And I, one more time, was reminded that it doesn't work that way, you know, that they out there will never understand us, you know, because the only people that understand us is us. You know, it's that therapeutic value of one addict working with another. And so I've given up trying to, you know, tell people about how special and, you know, miraculous that this program is and how it changes lives on a dramatic basis, on a daily basis. And so we got, you know, we got married, and there was only, you know, one small little hiccup in the whole thing is that she had this real rare cancer when we got married that had been in remission for about 5 years. And it was one of these slow-growing but ongoing cancers. And so knowing that she had this, you know, we decided that we would still, you know, get married and just see what happened. And out of that relationship with this woman, you know, she introduced me into some spiritual practices that I had never been exposed to before, a lot around meditation and deepening that connection with a power greater than myself. And as it turns out, over the next 4 to 5 years, the cancer came back, and she, you know, eventually the disease got her. You know, like that, her disease. And we had her at home with hospice, and she passed away at home. And once again, you know, I had my world rocked in a way that I'd never had it rocked before. But this time it was a little different, because I had developed this much deeper understanding of a loving God in my life, and was able to rely on that power to carry me through one of the most painful, difficult times of my life. And in spite of the fact that was a very short relationship, I am ever so grateful for those 5 years that we had together, because it had expanded my horizon so much in understanding this thing called God, this thing I don't understand, but this thing that I know for sure is present and in this moment. And the way that I stay in touch with that power is by staying in the moment. That's where God is. You know, that's where I see that happening. That's where I feel that connection, is when I'm able to stay in that moment and let that spirit, whatever you want to call it, you know, reveal itself to me. So I'm ever so grateful. I think I've also stuff to say, so I'm going to cut it a little short here. I'd like to just end with, I'm going to read a little something from the Just for Today, Living the Program, Chapter 9, out of our basic text. And it says here, living just for today reveals the burden of the past and the fear of the future. We learn to take whatever actions are necessary and to leave the results in the hands of our higher power. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bob and Patty. We do have some time left. You know, we can open the podium up for a little bit of sharing. I'd ask you to keep it kind of brief in case others want to share also. You know, I'll just say that I'm an addict named Jeff. And, you know, in listening to two speakers, I took a trip down memory lane myself when I got clean. There wasn't much Narcotics Anonymous, but one of the guys that was instrumental in my recovery, I'd call him up and we'd talk for about 10 minutes, and when I hung up the phone, I never was really sure of what he said, but I always felt better, and I knew what I needed to do. And he would say things like, we live each day moment by moment, basking in the revelation of God's will for us. And another one was that we don't measure our success by how long we've been clean or by what we've achieved, but we measure our success by how much we've overcome. And those little things at the time, I didn't get it, but over time, and he was good at repeating stuff, it sunk in. And really, like Bob said, this moment is all we have. And we can squander our past and worry away our future, but we can mess up the present worrying about those two things, and or we can just be right where we are. And for me, the 11th step has helped me get settled and understand that being in the moment. But it's not just when I'm sitting there getting quiet that teaches me how to stay present throughout the day, if I remember those lessons. But I want to thank both of you again for a great meeting. And when I say we have about a half hour, if you want to come up and share. It said 1:30 in the schedule. Let me take a look. Maybe I lied.
Hello, I'm Leo from Santiago, Chile. I really want to thank both of you for your share. You really got to me that idea of becoming a widower, because before I came to the States 30 years ago, I was married when I was 19, and my wife died of cancer. So that was one of the reasons why I traveled, I didn't know about any fellowship. I didn't know I was going to become an alcoholic in here in the States. The dope was too expensive. But when I came back to Chile 5 years later, my country has borders with the Peru and Bolivia, where the plant grows, so it's very easy to get that kind of drug. So I came back because my father was ill, and he dies a few months later. So here I was with this apartment, I have a job, I have cars, I was single, no kids. So I party for 15 years until things become broken apart little by little, and I become a very sad person until I arrived to that day when I made that call to Narcotics Anonymous in Santiago, and that was 9 years ago. And I haven't relapsed. I went to meetings for the first year every day. And then I began to, little by little, to grow in this new life. And I'm really thankful to have the opportunity to say that I have learned so much in these 2 or 3 days from you. And I'm happy, and that's what I want to say. Thank you for listening.
I'm Bernard. I'm an addict. I'm from Connecticut, and I want to thank you for your service. You know, but I just want to share how much gratitude I have for being here. If I don't tell somebody, I'm just simply gonna bust. So I just got that's all I came up here to let you know. I just came up here to let you know how much gratitude, how overwhelming this thing is to me. I'm talking about this is the first time I've made a world convention. This is my first time. You know, right, listen. I've been clean for 21 years and 8 months. And when I see all of these addicts that ain't clean, this clean, it's unbelievable. I'm talking about ain't nobody pissed off but the cop man. It's just unbelievable. As I walk down the street, up and down the street, I keep seeing us. I just keep seeing us from all over. I done met people from all over. It's just unbelievable to me. This is just unreal, man. And like it's been shared, you know, all we have is each other. No matter what happened, we have each other. No matter where I go, it's understood addiction. Once I say addiction, everybody understands exactly what happened to me. I was in pain, misery, and suffering, and I messed around and ran out, and I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I had to run out first, and then I came here. But this is just, and this first time I've ever been to San Diego. It's an unbelievable city. I was born in Harlem, so Harlem don't look like San Diego. So I just want, but it's just, everybody is so nice here. This is like when I first came here, the first day I came here, people were like, how you doing? I was like, none of your business, yo. In New York, we don't tell you how we do. We just say, none of your business, you know? But it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Man, my heart is filled with so much of the spirit of Narcotics Anonymous right now. I just had to get up here and say something. To thank you guys for your service and say, listen, that it's great to see everybody. And all I'm going to do is just keep coming. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
All right, baby. Oh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Judy from Mississippi.
Hi, Judy.
I'm an addict. Forgot to say that part. Yeah, I just wanted to thank y'all for sharing. You know, I came up here by myself, and I used to be real brave and do this a lot, and I went to some dark places in the last few years, and everything that I'm hearing for the last many months is just for today and living in the moment, you know, and I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for this journey that I've been on. You know, I heard several women in the last couple of workshops that, if I stay clean, everything is going to be okay. Everything already is okay. You know, what I have experienced in the last many years is being afraid of my thoughts, you know, and knowing that I didn't need to be afraid of my, knowing that that was the problem, but, I mean, thinking that that was the problem, but, like, not knowing, you know, and I'm in a place right now where I know that I don't need to be afraid of my thoughts, and I don't know if that makes any sense, but it makes sense to me. I thank y'all very much for staying in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. This is a wonderful way of life, and if you're new, just keep coming back. Thank you. Thank you for the show.
Hello, everybody. I'm David. I'm an addict. And I'm from Las Vegas. And I actually spent a lot of years here because this is where what I claim is home, San Diego. I got dirty here and I got clean, and got into most trouble here. So this is what I claim. But Bob here used to be my sponsor for many, many years, and he could tell you I worked the steps like really, really, really slow, and I was stubborn, and, you know, kind of still am, you know, but I've put together 25-plus years now, you know, I got a lot of his zen on me, a lot of his live in the moment. One of the things that he would say to me a lot is it's a God thing. And that might not mean a whole lot to you, but, you know, just a couple of simple words. It's a God thing. And I've always had troubles with the concept of God. And Bob was one of three sponsors named Bob that I've had over the years. Two here in San Diego, one in Vegas. And it was a common theme, you know, with all of them. Let's live here in the moment, you know. One of my other sponsors named Bob said, how long do you have to come to meetings? And his answer for that was, you have to come to meetings until you like coming to meetings. And when that happens, you get to come to meetings. And that taught me that I need to look at this whole thing as an honor and a privilege and you know, not a sentence. This isn't a sentence. There's so many times I've encountered newcomers, and believe me, I was one of them. They come to the meeting and, oh, what do I got to do this for? I got to do this for the rest of my life. Well, you know what? We're not worried about the rest of your life. We're worried about right just for today. And I just want everybody to think back on when you didn't understand what just for today was. And sometimes that may occur in your present, that you don't understand what just for today is. And that's happened to me too, you know. But when that happens, you know, I've got a sponsor, I've got the literature, I've got meetings. This is an honor and a privilege, and I'm so glad to be here. I've been, you know, listening to the various speakers that I've made it to hear, and lately all I could do is just, you know, and I've met up with people that I've known here in San Diego and in Las Vegas, you know, and so many friends in recovery, and I'm just overwhelmed with emotions. That, you know, I sit and listen to the speakers, you know, and I just let tears come down my eyes. And that's okay, because you know what? I'm not that hard-ass addict that I used to be. You know, I'm a lot softer person, and I'm really grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Hey everybody, my name's Clyde and I'm an addict from San Diego. You know, this gentleman was sharing about how the normies don't give us any special credit for what we've done and we understand each other. My wife's a perfect example. She's not going to give me a pat on the back for doing something I'm supposed to do. It's like they feel like, no shit, Sherlock. You're just acting like a normal person now, big deal. We understand what a big deal it is, do we not? So, anyway, I am overwhelmed with emotion here. I find myself weeping, and this is such a powerful thing for me. I wanted to express my gratitude for the group, and I just talked to my sponsor. The reason I'm at this particular meeting right now is because I told him I'm so excited that I'm worried that on Monday, after this convention's over, I'm going to have this big crash, and holy shit, what am I going to do? So he said, now, wait a minute. We've been through this before. Just calm down, Turbo, and enjoy yourself. Take it all in, and we'll worry about Monday morning when it gets here. Thank you for being here, and God bless this program.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tommy. I'm a grateful addict. You know, I came in and out of this fellowship a long time, since 81. I've been in and out, in and out. I've finally been able to put 2.5 years together with the help of God in the fellowship. I went to about 20 conventions in that time, and the last 10, I did service, and it helped me stay clean. You know, and I was like overwhelmed because I'm coming. I made it to the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. Saved my life. Saved my life. 5 years ago, I was living on the side of a mountain in a tent, and it was -5 degrees below zero, and I thought that was okay. You know, through Narcotics Anonymous and God's grace and mercy, I'm here in San Diego, 3,000 miles away from that mountain and that tent. Wow. You know, I was overwhelmed when I got on the plane. I was overwhelmed when I got off the plane. I heard a woman speak about their mother being happy that I was doing she was doing the right thing, and you know, and she had died, and back in November, my aunt, she turned around and told me that because I'm clean today, my mother would be happy that I was clean, and I cried again because I thought of that moment, you know, and living, you know, the living just for today, like. I can go back in the past and pick and choose the things I want to think about. And then all of a sudden those things come up. And lately it's just been pleasant things that have been coming up. It hasn't been that old nasty way of life. It's just been good things, you know. And that's what this has done to me. My spirit is good today, you know. And you know, I'm so blessed that this is what Narcotics Anonymous is about, you know, and if no one told you they loved you today, I love you. Thank you.
Be too loud, am I? My name is Terry, and I'm an addict. This is my sister Nancy, who came in the program a long time before me. Anyhow, I wanted to thank you guys so much for your shares. I really got so much out of them. And I was thinking when you were talking about normies, and I was thinking about when I first came in the program, how I was so pissed that I had to be here. Like, why can't I party? Why can't I have fun? Why do I have to be the one that has to go to meetings? And I remember when I was partying, and my sister and my other girlfriend that was in the program for a long time, they were having so much fun. And I was upstairs trying to smoke a little more, take a few more pills to get to where they were sitting downstairs clean. And then finally it dawned on me, hey, maybe you're doing something wrong here. And I remember one of the first meetings I went to when I found my first sponsor, what she shared at the meeting was how thankful she was to be an addict, because the drug was a symptom, but what she got in return. And what I have learned in my life now at this age is so much more peace and freedom than I had before. And I really noticed, you know, in my relationships with people, my family, and in my workplace, how I thought I knew it all, and why aren't they doing what I think they should do? Don't they know? Don't they know I am, like, so in control of everything? And, you know, no. And to be able to, and I used to, I've said so many times, like, I used to say, let go, let God, because my sister was in the program, and I'd hear some slogans. And I thought, I'm an addict, my name is Terry, like a joke. And how now, when I hear those sayings, that relief of letting go and not having to be in charge of nothing that I thought I was in charge of, and having that surrender for me, again, to one more thing, and then I'll shut up, but in our family, like, to surrender was next to giving up. Like, that was, and what I heard shared in a meeting was, you cannot have your power until you do surrender. And that's what I've learned here, and that's why I keep coming back. And it's my first convention too, and I'm so glad to be here. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Nancy. I'm an addict, and I want to thank you so much. Standing up here, I realize now how hard this is. I'm so happy to be here with my sister. This is just really great. I came to this workshop mainly because I am guilty of not living in the present moment, and you know, it's I realized as I was sitting there how much more I live in the present moment and how hard it is to get there. And I just have to say that when I first came in here, I did not want to live in the present moment. All my drugs were speedy, and I was running like a maniac, and to live in the present moment had to be the scariest thing of my life. And when I ran out of all options and I came in here and I sat at my first meeting, I decided that when I come to a meeting, I was just going to be there. That was how I learned to be in the present moment. So when I come to meetings, no matter how crazy my head is, it's like I put that down at the door and I listen. And I realized how I really never listened. I did not have the ability to listen. So I learned that from you guys. You know, you're sharing and teaching me how to do it. I didn't know. And I mean, out in the real world, you know, like I've been waiting to get an iPhone, but now I hear the iPhone 5 is coming. And it's like, when can I get it? It's like, you know, that's how the world is. It's so fast and it's moving so quickly. And, you know, so thank God for this program. And thank God that you know, I learned that living in the present moment is where everything happens. And, you know, the learning to meditate and the learning to sit still. And I'll tell you, having serenity for the first time in my life, I was so afraid of it. And it just was such a wonderful feeling to take a breath. And now when I come to meetings, that's why it's so important while you're doing your steps is so important. But coming to meetings, taking a breath and just like sitting there and being so grateful that you are among all your other people. And I've heard everyone up here say they felt disconnected. And so did I until I found people just like myself. And serenity is the most valuable thing I have. It taught me that I don't need to run. I don't want to be in the drama. And it also taught me that if I sit with the feelings of fear, they go away. And then I walk to the other side. And I couldn't do that without the help of the other addicts that helped me to learn how to live. So I just want to thank you all. Thank you for this topic. Thank you for coming here and sharing with us. And I'm glad to be here. So thanks.
Thank you, Nancy. Well, Tommy, you want to come back up here? We'll do the final reading and then close this meeting. Thank you again, Patty and Bob. We do recover from Jimmy K's story.
My name is Tommy. I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last chance, choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in lives of many addicts. It is available to all of us. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.